drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. When bass player Simon Starr came across text that was gender-neutral interpretation of Psalm 1 written by an unknown radical Yiddish-speaking feminist in the 1920s, he didn't ignore it. He wrote music to it for his band Yid, a condensed version of the band because there are 22 people in the band and we have 9 of them here. Well, they're my guests in the drawing room. And before I catch up with Simon for a chat, you might have to hear this particular piece of music right now. It's called Fun Tehillim, and I will be quite surprised if you tell me you don't like it. Simon Starr, that is one pretty cool, surprising, funky and pretty suave piece of music. How is the track pronounced? Because I think I've probably butchered it. I mean, I butcher most things.
No, it's Fun Tehillim.
Fun Tehillim.
Tehillim is the Hebrew word for Psalms.
You're the de facto manager of Yid, yes, which is short for Yiddish, for those who don't know. And we'll find out about the band shortly. But first, I want to hear more about the song we just heard because I'm intrigued by the story behind it. I mean, it's a fascinating story. What is that backstory?
So in March earlier this year, the Yiddish Cultural Centre in Melbourne, which is called Kadima, commissioned some different musicians to write some music to pre-existing Yiddish poetry. So Paul Grabowski, Lior, Josh Abrahams, all sorts of different people, Deborah Conway. And I was searching around. I couldn't find anything that I really liked. And then I met up with Danielle Charak, who's something of a Yiddish maven, and particularly literarily. And she gave me this thing, which was this, a translation of Psalm number 1, but written in a gender-neutral way and in a very sort of empowering humanist way, as opposed to bowing down to the big guy. And I've got two daughters and a son, and I'm always very conscious of, I'm trying to make them feel as empowered as they can in the world. So I loved the lyrics, and then the music came because I was listening to a lot of Fela Kuti at the time. And so that combined with, I could hear the three Ziga girls, who are Deborah Conway's daughters, Deborah and Willie's daughters. They have this certain sound when they all sing together. There's only two of them today, but it was that perfect blend of sort of feminine girl and strong woman. And I don't know if you've ever met them, but they're all sort of Amazonian. They're all sort of 6 foot plus. And so to hear a psalm from a feminist point of view sung by these three Amazons was very exciting for me.
So tell me about Yid. How did the big band come together? Because when we say big, it's quite big.
It's
logistics, I don't know how you manage that.
Yeah, it's over the top. It's 22 pieces. And I was living overseas for 6.5 years. I was living in Israel for 6.5 years just playing music. And when I got back, I was having lunch with Willie Ziga. And just as a joke, he said, what are you going to do? I said, I really need some money. He said, why don't you start a Yiddish big band? We laughed and forgot about it, and that was it. And then I kept running into all these mates of mine who I hadn't seen for years, who I loved playing with. And then I said, I'm thinking of starting this band. What do you reckon? They all said yes. And before you know it, there's 27 of us drinking vodka toasts.
That's quite something, though. Yeah. Before you know it, I mean, that's quite a figure.
Well, Kadima, the Yiddish Cultural Centre, they got behind it and they sort of really encouraged me. And then I thought, yeah, maybe this could work. We did a rehearsal. It was a lot of fun. It was interesting. And then it's evolved. Within a year we were playing at WOMAD, and then a few months later we were in Canada playing to 5,000 people, standing ovation, and we sort of got our act together by that stage. The first year was pretty ragged, to say the least. But after a year we got an idea of who we are, and now it's turned into, for me, an extremely special project where all the people in it are just really beautiful human beings, and I feel very privileged to be a part of it.
This is The Drawing Room on RN, and my guest is Simon Starr, who's the bass player and de facto manager of Yid. So what was your ambition then for the band? I mean, it really developed quite organically, as you explain. Was it just to make music, or has it developed into a kind of deeper motive?
Yes. So we started off with the idea of me just hanging out with friends that I hadn't seen. I didn't want to sort of have a welcome back to Australia party. So that was the initial thing.
And so then you had a secret one, really.
I had a secret agenda. And then as we performed and people got excited about it, much more than I was, I kept thinking, wow, this doesn't sound so great. But people were really loving it. And I think they loved the new energy that was being thrust into Yiddish language. And then I became quite infected by the enthusiasm. And now not that I'm a Yiddish evangelist, I'm not an evangelist of anything, but I become very excited about Yiddish language, having now researched a bit of the poetry and some of the songs, and it's often so profoundly moving. And not only that, but a lot of Yiddish poetry is much more radical than the stuff that is coming around today, and this is from 100 plus years ago. These people were really on the very cutting edge of whatever ideologies were going around at the time.
So how about your own connection to culture through the language, through Yiddish? Has it been an eye-opener for you, or has it helped you explore your own cultural heritage?
In Jewish households, you tend to be either, in Australia, tend to either be a Hebrew-speaking family or a Yiddish-speaking
Correct.
Family.
Yeah.
As opposed to in Israel, there's heaps of Arabic and Ladino and all these other languages. So I grew up in a more Hebrew-speaking household. So Yiddish was something I'd heard, but, all the sort of swear words and comedic things that are used in Seinfeld mainly.
Yeah.
But and so, yes, it has been a huge eye-opener for me. I've since read a few books on Yiddish and I'm sort of doing a very, very hack job of teaching myself some of the things. But through translating the lyrics, I've learned quite a bit, and it's just it's a very rich language. You know how there's that thing where I think it's Eskimos have 12 words for snow or something like that? Yiddish has lots of words for various scatological things, and it's a very funny language.
It is a very funny language, which is why it's been deployed in comedy so much, right?
Absolutely,
Jewish comedy.
Yeah.
So what is Yiddish? What distinguishes it from Hebrew? And I know it's having a bit of a revival at the moment and there's a lot of language maintenance work going on around it. How's that going in Australia?
So to answer the first question, it's a mixture of Hebrew and Russian and other Slavic languages, bits of German. If someone speaks German, they'll kind of understand Yiddish, and if they speak Hebrew, they'll kind of understand it. And as to the revival, well, I'm not sure exactly why it is right now, but it's certainly gaining a lot of momentum. There's Yiddish theatre developing in Melbourne. Melbourne's traditionally been the centre of it in Australia and in many ways around the world. It's like it's the only city in the world, I think, that has a Yiddish-speaking day school for children, primary school. So those factors combined with the amount of Holocaust survivors who live in Melbourne meant that, you know, if it was going to happen anywhere, it was going to happen here. And it's certainly experiencing resurgence in New York and Israel, where young people are getting involved with it as a way in, a sort of an apolitical, unpolarized entrance to Jewish culture and history. And so from what I hear, it's the language of non-Jewish lesbians in New York.
Non-Jewish lesbians.
Yes, as an outsider language and as a sort of a mode of outsider identification.
It is. what is the essence of Yiddish culture? What differentiates it from what we normally associate with Jewish culture, if we can even talk about culture like that?
Yeah, it's a pretty big thing. But I mean, I would say that the way people perceive Jewish culture, in, definitely in America and partly in Australia, is through Yiddish culture because, you know, all the words that are in comedy that people have grown up with, Mel Brooks and Woody Allen and Seinfeld and all that sort of thing, they are Yiddish. So it's traditionally described as laughter through the tears because it was a language that was born out of a lot of suffering, but it was always, there was a lot of gallows humour. And as a way of dealing with the suffering was to have a laugh and to make other people laugh and to find some sort of positivity out of what would have been a pretty miserable life.
Let's talk about the next song the band is going to perform. Again, I might butcher this, help me out, De Boxer, which is Simon and Garfunkel's The Boxer. Tell me about the sewing machine you used when you recorded this song.
So we were looking for a song to do that was long. It's kind of like a long story that was not a traditional Yiddish song, that was a song that everyone would be able to identify with. And we tried a few songs out, and this one was the one that for me resonated the strongest because as soon as it was in Yiddish, it feels like an immigrant story, you know, about a guy on the streets of New York, sort of in the tenements and all that sort of thing, just sort of struggling to make it through the day. And so we associated that with what it would have been like, the mass migration to New York in the late 19th, early 20th century from Eastern Europe. And then they would have all been working in sweatshops, the sound of sewing machines, people working in the schmutter business and in the clothing business. And so we put that soundscape at the start of it on our album, and it sort of recast the whole song. And we were really pleased that Paul Simon loves this version and he never licenses his own songs to be covered, but he heard our version and he licensed it because obviously he must feel the respect we're paying it, but also he likes the twist on the story that we gave it.
It's amazing. Okay, let's hear it. This is De Boxer.
Wenn ein Ingo läuft die Zores, keiner weiß nicht, wer ich bin. Kopf verloren, alle Keuches, war ein Käschen mit Wärter, keiner halt nicht fort. Als falsch gewesen, man versteht nur, was man will verstehen, man hört doch nicht die Recht. Daheim bin ich weg allein, bin ein Bocher gegeben. Hab gehabt sich mit Fremden, in der Stillkeit von Erwachsenen hat erschrocken. Eingelegt, sich gedreht in alles Eisen, in die Straßen ganz allein, während sich geplonge, keiner weiß nicht wo. Leilalei, 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 leilalei. Ich muss essen, ich such Arbeit, weiß nicht was, aber keiner geht nicht. Bloß die Maid lach, wo spazieren auf 7th Avenue. Der MS ist, ich bin gewähnt, so ich verloren, hab getreist, ich dort mit sei. Leile, 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 leile.
Was De Boxer performed by a scaled down version of the band Yid. I mean, you have to scale them down because you can't actually fit them into the ABC. I understood 7th Avenue and New York in there, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
So cover versions of other people's work, I imagine people like hearing those kind of takes, don't they?
So you have the, you know, you have the purists who sing along with the older songs, but when we play The Boxer and there's the Lila Lai bit, people go, you know, they get very involved. And we're doing a new cover this. We're premiering a new cover on Sunday, which is going to be Back in Black.
Tell me more. This is an AC/DC song, Akadaka, for those who don't know. Yeah.
We wanted to do an Akadaka song. And I sort of like the angle of taking that song and, you know, a lot of ultra-Orthodox Jews wear black. They wear black hats and black coats. And so we've got a good friend who's an amazing dancer who was brought up ultra-Orthodox. And he's since explored other things and he's basically secular now, but he has a very deep affection for his upbringing. And so he's going to sort of do a dance which is going to go sort of a Michael Jackson Smooth Criminal version of Hasidic dancing, as he sort of, he's going to start off secular and then he's going to gradually go back to black. He's going to be back in black in a black hat and a black coat, and it's sort of, you know, it's I probably shouldn't have given that away, but
no, I'm so glad you did, because the visual is just like electrifying my brain.
Yeah.
My brain's just gone off.
Yeah.
Not every band member in Yid is Jewish, but does it help if you have an understanding of Jewish music or, I suppose, culture to be in the band?
Look, I think it helps to have some understanding, but you know, music is such a universal language, and the specific people who are in this band are all, in my opinion, like towering artists. They're not just sort of hacks who are playing in other people's bands as their sort of day-to-day. They've got their own projects, and part of that process to become an artist like that is you have to listen and you have to be able to empathise and communicate. And so all the musicians in this band are deep communicators, and so it's not hard to get inside universal themes of passion and grief and happiness and joy and dancing and all those sorts of things. And it just happens to be in Yiddish, I think.
Just happens.
Yeah.
It's not easy keeping 22 people working like a well-oiled and happy machine, I imagine. Food is your secret weapon.
Yeah, we sort of...
That's how I treat my children, just keep them fed.
Yeah, look,
and you'll get silence.
The band marches on its stomach. From the first rehearsal, the expectations were quite high. We got a local guy who makes hummus and falafel and all that to cater it. And then we had lots of vodka. And then since then, every rehearsal is catered, and it's a joyous thing. We come together, we eat for half an hour, 22 of us. There's a lot of commentary on the food. There's catching up on how everyone is. And then, well-fed and possibly sleepy, we repair to the rehearsal room. And one thing we always say whenever we get booked for a concert or a festival is the band has to eat. This band has to eat, and we have to be able to drink a toast to each other, drink l'chaim before we play, because it's just part of the culture. And a band that big, there's often not much money to share. So it's one way to really celebrate together is to at least have some decent food.
And how about your audiences? Is it a largely Jewish audience? Or are you finding that you've broadened the interest in this kind of tradition?
Well, definitely the first audiences were Jewish. But, you know, when we played at WOMAD, you know, there's 5,000 people in the audience, probably 500 of them max were Jewish. So you had 4,500 people going absolutely bananas. And it was, you know, we measured it. It was 50 degrees on stage. It was probably 45 on the ground in front of us, direct sunlight, Adelaide, yeah. March, unbelievable. And people were dancing and going crazy, and they were listening the whole time. So that was when we saw maybe this could be more than just a local community vibe. And since then, you know, we went to Toronto. We played to lots of people who were not Jewish. We played at the Melbourne Jazz Festival to, you know, over in Darabin, which is, you know, you need a passport to get there from Caulfield. And it was...
Melbourne joke for those listening in the Northern Territory or something, but yes, need a passport.
It was packed, and then very few people I recognised, and they were all going off. You know, there was standing ovation. So it makes me think that there's definitely something universal about the themes, and also there's a lot of in the performance, even though it's like a jazz big band with a sort of a funk and electronica vibe. So everyone's going to get into that.
Everyone, I agree, everyone is going to get into that. Simon, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Patricia.
That's Simon Starr, who's been my guest in the drawing room. He's, of course, the de facto manager of Yid. He's also the bass player. Now, if you're in Melbourne on Sunday, you can catch Yid at Hubbo Hall. Is that right?
That's right.
Hubbo Hall in Sinclair Street in Elstonwick in Melbourne. That's it for the show tonight. I'll be back again tomorrow night at 6 p.m. for more of RN Drive. Catch you then.